Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Tangential Banter. My name is Ben Mowell, and I'm here joined, as always, by my co-host, Jack Korzenowski.
Ahoy there, y'all.
And we also have another guest with us this evening, or morning, or whenever you're listening to this. We're recording it in the evening. But a good friend of mine from back home in Michigan, Andrew Lloyd.
Hey, I hope none of you are starting your day with this podcast. So hopefully it's in the evening and not in the morning. So I'll throw that in there.
There's no better way to start your day off.
That's right. A little Folgers, a little tangential banter. You know.
The best part of waking up is tangential banter.
In your ear.
In your ear, yeah. Andrew, I was kind of hoping you'd do the longtime listener, first-time caller, you know, sort of thing. Missed opportunities.
Should have prepped me on that. Should have.
I'm sorry, I failed as a host here. Yeah. But so to start things off, we were just talking right as we jumped on the call and before we started recording. I was giving Jack a little bit of the background of some of the shared experiences that Andrew and I have in our friendship over the years. And one of them was watching WWE in our friend's basement in high school. And I want to clarify that we would go out there every week and we started watching Monday Night Football. And then when that season ended, we had to find something else to watch. And so WWE was one of the items that we would watch. And, I'm going to say definitively, there may have been a little bit of a gray area, but I'm pretty confident that almost all of us in the room did it as a joke and didn't really take it seriously. There may have been some who were more captivated and believing it than others, but.
I will say Corey seemed to be pretty into it compared to the rest of us. I mean.
I wasn't going to call him out by name, but I'm glad.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I hope if he listens, you know, which I hope he listens, I'll call him out by name. Yeah. I mean, I would say he was a John Cena fanboy. I don't know if he's still is now, but.
Yeah. Corey, if you're listening, tell us if you're still a John Cena fanboy.
That's right. We need to know.
So all that to say, what came up in that conversation, Jack, you added an interesting factoid about your own life connected to WWE that caught me quite off guard.
Yeah, I've never been into it, but ever since I was a young kid, my mom has been a big WWE fan and still is. And as I was telling you guys, Andrew and Ben, she just texted me that Randy Orton is coming back after a year and a half of injury. And I was thinking to myself, wow, I didn't even know he was injured. And I, because I don't keep up on that sort of thing. But apparently she does. But I like
The best part about that is it's not just the fact, like you could say, oh yeah, my mom likes WWE. And you're like, oh, that's interesting, but okay. But the fact that it had literally come up in your interactions with her from this text message, just like icing on the cake, it's perfect.
Yep, I took her, this would have probably been close to 10 years now. It was shortly before I moved to Iowa, within like a couple of years, and I moved in 2016, which would have been 7 years ago. But yeah, I took like WWE, came to Minneapolis where I was living at the time, and I got, like, as a gift for her, I got us tickets. And she was so into it, and I was just sitting there the whole time. Just like, I don't get it, but she loves it, so good for you, Mom. I'm glad I was able to make you happy.
That's sorry, true love right there.
No. I was going to say, that transition, so I said, to start the recording off, I said there's another thing that she's really interested in that you wouldn't expect, you know, a mom from the Midwest to be into. And that also has a funny backstory.
Before you tell that story, I want to ask one question before we leave the WWE topic. Is what is your stance on the validity or quote unquote realness of WWE as you were observing it and saw it live?
Oh, I mean, it's definitely choreographed, and it's like it's just a big show. Like they're all actors.
I'm shocked.
Like the, I mean, like the.
You take that back.
I'm sorry.
My worldview is shattered.
Corey, stop listening now.
But even so, like I've heard people. I remember when I was young, I asked my mom. I was like, wait, it's not real? Like, it's all just, you know, fake, which is how you would think of it. And she said, well, yeah, it's all, you know, they're all like kind of said what I just said because she was in on it. And but it's the same thing as like when you watch a movie or watch like a TV show, like, you know, that like when you watch, I don't know, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, that those people don't actually own a bar. Those aren't actual people that they just happen to catch on like a home video. You know, it's a whole production and they're just playing characters. It's the same thing with WWE, but that doesn't take away from the athleticism that they have.
That's fair.
And like to actually choreograph all of those things is tough. That's tough work. And injury prone, and takes a lot of practice, and you have to like really trust each other to do things the exact right way. Otherwise somebody can really get hurt. So it's still impressive. Don't get me wrong there.
Yeah. And I think they kind of found whatever drive is at the heart of reality TV, like what causes people to want reality TV. I think they found like whatever that is before reality TV was a thing, right? Like that was kind of that original reality TV where it was, you know, to the astute observer, it was very scripted and choreographed, whatever. But it kind of felt like it was
felt
real.
Yeah, yeah, it felt like real drama, and people soaked it in because the characters are so flamboyant. It's probably not the right word, but like
that's the right word.
overly caricatured, and they're just kind of extreme.
Yeah.
Kind of like how Parks and Rec is compared to The Office, because The Office, you could like. A lot of the characters are caricatured to an extent, but not to an unrelatable, unrealistic degree. Like you could, like, I'm sure a lot of people have worked with a guy like Dwight or Angela or Michael, you know, they are a bit caricatures, but they're really like relatable and realistic. Parks and Rec, not so much. Not a lot of people have worked with a Don Meagle or a Ron Swanson. They may have worked with people who are halfway there, but not to such an extreme as the characters on the show. I forget what point I was trying to make with that.
I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know either. Nice tangent.
But
there we go.
So now we can go back to the second thing that your mom likes that we wouldn't expect.
Right. So also for as long as I can remember, since I was a little kid, my mom has also been really into monster trucks. And one time, now this was like as I was moving to Iowa. I think before I knew I was moving, because you have to buy the tickets months in advance, I got tickets to a monster truck rally that was coming to Minneapolis. And then I moved, and like the show was like just like it was within the first couple months, maybe even the first few weeks of me moving. And I didn't feel up to driving, like taking a day off to drive down there early enough to go, or maybe I just wasn't up for it because I had just moved and I was already exhausted. So my mom ended up going to monster trucks with a couple of my friends and I wasn't there.
It's amazing.
So a couple of my friends took my mom to monster trucks.
Now I just met you, Jack, so I don't want to like, you know, cross the line here, but does your mom live in a trailer park in a double wide by chance?
Because,
hitting all the characteristics right now, right?
No, that's the thing. She works like in the finance industry. She's like she just told me what her title was, but she works like in downtown Minneapolis for a financial investment firm. She lives in the suburbs and she loves WWE and monster trucks.
Wow. Does she drink Busch Light, watch NASCAR?
Shop at Walmart exclusively.
None of those things.
Wear jorts and cowboy boots?
Nope.
That's right.
She does.
Grandma's,
wow. She does like Shania Twain. Shops.
Oh,
she
yeah.
Okay.
That's fair. That's fair. I mean, I like Shania Twain. As far as like one of my first childhood crushes, Shania Twain. Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
I could see that. Mm-hmm.
Good old Shania.
Good old Shania. Faith Hill. Who needs her? Shania's the real queen.
I can.
I thought that was like Reba or
No, Reba's Dolly. Dolly. I mean, Dolly is like, you know, the real queen, but you know, from like, if we're talking the 90s,
she's like the queen.
We're talking the 90s, which is country's golden era. You know, the
90s. Wow, you heard it here first.
Heard it here first. No one's beating Shania Twain.
That's fair. I only ever really came to tolerate slash accept country music while I worked on the farm for 5 years.
Yeah.
I didn't listen to it before and haven't listened to it since. And so it's not really a genre that I follow super closely.
Yeah. It's a cultural thing. You know, it's forced upon you and you just kind of learn to like it.
I've got to jump in. So y'all said that the 90s was the golden age of country. I would argue that maybe that was the golden age or perhaps the birth of maybe modern country, because you have country from like the 50s, 60s, 70s, like Hank Williams Jr., David Allan Coe. I'm trying to think of some other ones. That's more classic country. And you listen to those classic country songs, and they definitely have a different taste than modern country and a lot of pop country that's around now. So I would say like Shania Twain, Trace Adkins are almost a different genre than the original country. And I only know that and say that because I got a good friend who loves the old country and a little bit of the new country. But because of him, I've been exposed to what is at least two different phases of country in this country.
Yeah, I mean, this is not where, you know, we're planning to take this, but while we're on this tangent, I mean, you have, yeah, like real country music, which is before the 90s probably. But like, yeah, there's something different about 90s country where it's like, I think it ushered in what you have now for country, but it's way better than what you have now. I think the songs are more relatable. It's not like too far into pop. And, you know, I think I'm just biased too, because I was born in 1990 and this is the music I heard in the car that my mom played all the time. So it's like I can sing the words to the songs and can name the artist to the song. And like, again, useless information that I probably wish wasn't in my head, but I know a lot of 90s country songs.
Waylon Jennings, that was another classic country singer. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Had to get that in there.
Conway Twitty.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could go all the way back. You get Johnny Cash in there. Like
Johnny Cash.
It's all good stuff, but I don't know all the words there.
Well, so. I think good is debatable, but it exists.
It exists. Yeah.
It exists.
Okay. That's fair.
I think. The only thought I had as you were talking is that I do think over the past 10 to 15 years, it seems like the most popular strand of each genre of music has moved closer toward this middle style of music where they all kind of sound similar. And I think a lot of the complaints that people have about, say, rap or pop music or whatever, where it's just really repetitive and there's not really any creativity in it. I feel like the same has happened for popular country songs in a lot of ways, where almost all the genres are losing their the more lyrically creative elements of it, and it's just becoming about the beat and some catchy tune, you know. And it's not really telling a story in the song. It's just like these are words set to music.
Are you saying that each individual genre flows towards a default kind of feeling, but the default feeling between the different genres is different? Or are you saying that all genres, mainstream songs and bands, are all coalescing around a common feel?
I'm saying actually, what I was saying is the second thing, but I think the first thing that you said is true. So like yes. a genre is kind of defined by a similar style, vibe, instrument usage, tone, keys, riffs, all that kind of stuff, right? But that what I'm also saying is that I think the most popular, it's like, how would I describe it? Like a wagon wheel almost, right? Where each genre is a spoke. And the more popular the music is, the closer it is to the center and the more similar it is to the other popular music from the other genres.
So what he's saying is that guy from Hootie and the Blowfish who sings that Rock Me Mama Like a Wagon Wheel, all songs lead to that song.
That's what I got.
Darius Rucker?
Is that Darius Rucker, yes, thank you, yeah.
Yeah, it's that's a funny example. I'm glad you added that.
Yeah.
No but no, I think part of it is, I think music producers have gotten really scientific about like what triggers people to be interested in music and what catches their attention. And then I think maybe there are some tied to that. There may be some like fundamental rhythms and notes or whatever that just connect with our psyche in a way that others don't. That it's like a psychological shortcut to get people to like your music, even if the music doesn't really have that much going for it.
I was about to speculate that maybe all of the popular stuff sounds the same because there's something going on in our brains that makes people generally like it.
Mm-hmm. That's my hypothesis.
Crack the code, folks. Good job,
Jens. Crack the code. Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think you could like apply that Ben's theory to like Taylor Swift songs, you know, like they just progress more and more to like a pop sound or like a sound that was pleasing the masses basically. And she just kind of catered her music to do so.
Then she started dating an NFL star.
Yeah. And now she's back on the Met. Could have cared less about her. Travis Kelce put her on the map.
Wow, I never thought we would be discussing WWE monster trucks and the comings and goings of Taylor Swift on this podcast.
Oh yeah,
but here we are. The tangents take you places you never imagined.
Oh yeah. Well, I know Ben, he was probably a big Swiftie back in the day, you know.
Oh yeah,
all her songs. I know.
No, I actually hear more Taylor Swift these days than I have in a long while because I think you're both aware that my sister-in-law lives with us and she is a Swiftie, at least to some degree. And
she
so
get a tattoo? She get one of
no,
the
tattoos? No tattoo.
Okay.
But
Corey, if you're listening, shout out to Rachel. I'm pretty sure she's got a Swiftie tattoo. Mad respect.
Nice. Yeah, anytime she's doing something like working in the kitchen or taking a shower or whatever, she'll have Taylor Swift playing. So she does listen to other things, but that's the primary choice.
Interesting.
That and like true crime.
Oh, just true crime podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You should tell her about this podcast. Maybe she'd switch over.
Oh, we cover all the key points of Taylor Swift and true crime.
Yeah. You know, and she's got a mention in the podcast now too. So
that's why I like to mention people is because, you know, people mm-hmm. like to hear their own name. Yeah. So if you tell them that you mentioned them in their podcast, they'll listen to hear what you said.
Uh-huh. And I mean, you might go back and edit it out, but that's.
Yeah, we actually. I can't remember if I've talked about it before. I know I've explained it to certain specific guests or people had questions, but we really don't do any editing of the audio clips themselves. Like we record it all in one go, and then the most we'll ever do is like chop it up and then add breaks in there. But there's never, I think in one instance, we took something out that we didn't want to have in it, but 99.9% of the time, what you hear is what was there.
That was probably the episode your brother Andy was on, right? He's just like, oh, can't leave that in there.
Well, we can't be criticizing Andy. He's like our most consistent listener, I think. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so.
We love you, Andy. Please don't stop listening to us.
I have I think I've listened to every episode.
Nice.
But I think this is a good time for me to admit something about my listening habits to the show. So
do you listen at 1.25?
No. So sometimes I will listen, like say I can't fall asleep at night. And I'll pop in the old earbud. And
yes.
I tend to wake up, you know, it's like 3 a.m. and I've caught up on all 3 episodes. I'm like, oh yeah, hey. Check the box.
You know, I
normally go back and listen to ones I'm interested in, but I have fallen asleep listening to Tangential Banter on several occasions.
Ooh, I'm okay with that. I listen to podcasts going to bed like every night.
I
put like a sleep timer on it so I don't miss too much. But I think as I'm like tossing and turning in my sleep, I end up like it. I don't know what happens, but I end up like kind of restarting it somehow. I don't know if I hit something on my headphones or on the phone, but even if I set the sleep timer, more often than not, it still goes through the whole episode or whatever I have queued up, which is kind of a pain.
Yeah. I didn't know there was a sleep timer. That's good to know.
On my app, there is. It's the Pocket Casts.
Oh, okay.
Pocket sand. I was cheesed off when oh crap, why can't I remember his name? Johnny Hardwick, when Johnny Hardwick passed away. That didn't make me sad, that made me angry.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, me neither.
Johnny Hardwick is the voice actor who played Dale Gribble on King of the Hill. The pocket sand guy. He's the pocket sand guy. And he was my
favorite. I only know the phrase.
I'll send you the clip. It's Dale Gribble from King of the Hill. He's my favorite TV character of all time, animated or live action. And that's a high bar to meet because I've watched Seinfeld with Kramer. I've watched Parks and Rec with Mark Swanson.
Pause. You have a like 2-foot by 3-foot poster of Cosmo Kramer that is wall art in your domicile.
I do. I have the Kramer in my house.
Yep, the Kramer.
I do.
And you're putting this guy above him.
Yes.
Oh man.
I know. It's a high bar. I told it was a high bar.
Can you play the clip like on the podcast, or will you get, you know, monetized or whatever?
I don't think I can. It'll take me a second to get it pulled up and such, but I think I could do it. I was gonna say, and they were they're bringing King of the Hill back. Like they're renewing it, and I was so excited because more Dale Gribble. And right when they announced, because there had been rumors for a few years that they were bringing King of the Hill back, and then right after it was like officially announced that it's gonna happen, and I was so excited. I was like, yes, more Hank Hill, more Dale Gribble. And then Johnny Hardwick died, and I was mad.
That's too bad.
Yeah,
I've never consoled someone over the loss of their favorite voice actor before. So,
trying to
figure out what's the appropriate level of emotion to express here.
Yeah, do you have a rebuttal to a better character though, Ben? I mean, I just said you said Kramer,
favorite TV character. Oh man, favorite TV. That's a tough one. That's really tough. The name that comes to mind is Jake Peralta from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, played by Andy Samberg.
A good character, yeah.
Or what's the name of his officer? The guy who's like almost insane and goes undercover. With the curly hair.
Oh, the guy from... Is he the same guy from The League?
Yes. The guy who plays Rafi. Plays Rafi in The League, and he plays... Adrian Pimento.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he's got definitely a specific character type that he can play.
Yeah, yes, he does. They're like, we need someone... We need someone who's like... probably on the criminal side but likable, right? Like that's his character that he plays.
Yeah, a little unstable.
Yep. I don't know. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else that climbs up there.
Yeah, you're probably thinking Pa from Little House on the Prairie. I know he's one of your favorites.
I we never watched it. My mom
What?
read us the books, but we never watched the show.
Man.
Because we didn't own a TV until I was like 10 or 12.
Yeah,
So
that's why you're so
you read the
smart.
books?
My mom read us the books when we were kids, yeah. A lot of times at night, well, when you don't have a TV, you got to have other things to do. So
Yeah.
my mom would read the whole stories to the whole family or like all the kids before bed.
Yeah,
Oh,
So she'd read for half an hour.
I was unaware that that Little House on the Prairie was books.
Yeah, that's where it
Oh,
started.
yeah.
Yeah,
Eliza May Elkin.
I read some of the books to my son Henry. He likes them, and then we'll
Yeah.
like listen to them on audio on long car rides.
Hmm.
Yeah, but I never grew up watching the show or reading the books. It's only like being married. My wife really likes it all, so I get
Yep.
kind of stuck with it. But
We watched Seven Brides for Seven Brothers a couple of years ago. I don't know if you've seen that or not, but that's a favorite of my wife and her sisters. And you watch it and you're like, this is actually kind of terrible. Not even like production quality. It's a musical, so it's gimmicky and whatever, but it's literally about these like seven mountain men dudes who go into town and abduct women to be their wives.
Oh, wow.
And then they convince the women to like them and they realize that they have good hearts over time or whatever. I'm like, wait, how is it that you came to like this movie? You know?
Man, this is Corey, if you're listening.
It's just a
Has
movie
like
based off the Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, it's pretty much what it should be called. Yeah. Seven brides for seven brothers, and the brides have Stockholm syndrome.
Just doesn't have as catchy a title.
When was this movie made?
Oh, it's got to be like in the 60s, maybe.
Okay,
Oh,
yeah, that's
50s or
cool.
60s. It's old school. Yeah. Maybe as late as the early 70s. There are some catchy musical numbers in it, so
Yeah,
if you
I mean,
watch it, you'll be singing those tunes.
get stuck in your head. I mean, yeah, it's like Sound of Music, you know? Is the
Yeah.
movie that good? I don't know, but those songs sure get stuck in your head.
Do they literally like abduct the women and like bind their hands and feet as they're bringing them back to their lair?
No, okay. Their lair is like a cabin, and I'm trying to remember, it's like their mom died. Or their parent, both their parents died, so they're all like, it's sympathetic that they're these uncultured and they need someone to teach them how to be civilized, kind of. That's how it's all framed up
Step
in
one,
this
don't
premise.
abduct women.
But yeah, no, they go into town with like a wagon, and I can't remember if there's like a dance happening or whatever. Actually, no, I think they like are running into different houses and stuff, but they literally just chuck the women over their shoulder, throw them into the wagon,
Good
and then
plan. Oh,
race
so
off out of town as quickly as possible.
they all go down on the same day and they each pick one.
Oh yeah, yep.
Oh, yeah,
Yeah.
okay.
So it's one of those things where Sarah was like, yeah, this is kind of weird. I remember enjoying it as a kid and now watching it as an adult, I'm like, oh, that's not great. As a side note, I'm now going to say, Corey, if you're listening, following pretty much every topic that we cover, get a shout out in there.
That's right. We're gonna make him a fan of the show. You watch.
Jack, did you succeed or?
Oh, for the pod. Well, so the way I record my sound clips is I have a long story short, no, because I have to like you
Thank you.
guys talking in the meeting or in the podcast prevents me from recording the clip
Oh, okay.
because
Sure.
the meeting is through Google Meets, which you log into on Google Chrome and the way or I guess any web browser, but the way I record the clips is I find the clip on YouTube or whatever through a web browser, usually, such as the clip I'm trying to look up on YouTube. And then I have a my sound recording or sound editing in general software. You can tell it to in for the input that it records, you can set that to what is going into your headphones. So basically you can set this program's input to your headphones or your speakers or whatever output. But so then if I record it though, it's going to record your guy's voice on top of the clip. So I was like, I guess it's not going to happen. But what I can do is I can, after this, after that we do this episode, we can, I can make it a clip forever in Andrew's memory.
Yeah, perfect. I'll take it.
Do you go by Andrew or do you, or Andy?
Oh man, never Andy. My, for some reason, my mom was like, you're not allowed to be called Andy. So yeah.
What about and?
No, that's, that would be a new one. I had a manager call me Drew for a little while when I worked at, I worked at this really fancy restaurant called Ponderosa Steakhouse.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is that just a Michigan thing?
It must be, because it's not a fancy restaurant. It's like a buffet, but anyway.
Buffets can be fancy, but
yeah, I mean, it was. Trust me.
It's not fast food, so it's at least second tier. That's true.
Yeah, it's a step above. But then, like, some people called me AJ in college too, because those are my initials. So that was all right too, but never Andy.
Okay.
He has some really rude friends who call him Burger or Berg sometimes too.
Yeah.
What's the story behind that?
It's not worth telling.
I can regale you offline.
Okay.
There you go. If Corey is a guest on this podcast, he can tell the story, but outside of that.
Good to know.
Yeah, see.
Okay, so I want to switch gears a little bit and get to the topic that we intended to talk about this evening, which actually kind of fits in pretty well for those of you who are regular listeners. A couple of episodes ago, we talked about what if modern inventions didn't exist when Terry was on the podcast with us. And we talked about the scenarios that could have played out if we didn't have video, if we didn't have circles and levers, and if we didn't have toilets. So the topic we want to talk about tonight is actually kind of the inverse of that, of what doesn't exist yet that we should have or that we would like to see. And maybe what would the world look like if those things existed? So, Andrew, it was a topic you brought up. I'm curious what thoughts you have in mind, if there's specific things that you've been wondering about or scheming, trying to make happen.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's several things, but there's one thing that's been on my heart and mind and very near and dear to me. If only I could figure out how to pull it off. And that would be, I don't know what I'd call them yet, but like basically high score urinals. So it would be a urinal that has like a sensor on it, just like a tiny little sensor. And if you hit it with your pee, like, you know, you have a scoreboard up above you, and like the score your score can be higher based on how consistent you can hit it with your stream. And I was thinking, like, the benefits of that would be, first off, people are actually trying to get it in the toilet. I mean, second, that's, you know, important. Like, I mean, how much more fun, like, would your restaurant or whatever be if, like, you know, you had a game involved with going pee? I mean, just like people would be showing up, ordering a bunch of drinks just to try and break the high score in the bathroom at, you know, your local McDonald's. You know, so
that's, I like the premise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I originally thought you were going to say it'd be like, those machines they have in arcades where it's like a speed bag that's hanging down and you have to punch it as hard as you can.
Oh,
and then it measures how much force you generate. So it's have a pressure
sensor. That could also be part of it. That's even, you know.
Well, yeah, there could be a lot.
We could really take off.
There could be a lot of metrics.
Yeah, you could have total volume or weight or whatever.
Yeah. Speed.
Longest duration.
Consistency. Like, you know, how much, or accuracy. So you can have, like, you know, what's the longest you got it, time-wise, that you got it into the target? Or what about, okay, well, what's your accuracy? Like, how much of your total...
Yeah, volume is actually hitting right in the center.
Yeah. And then, as Ben said, like volume or speed or pressure.
Mm-hmm.
do you remember N64 playing Super Smash Brothers? And then every couple missions, they had like a special challenge. And it was like one of the challenges for each character was called Break the Targets. And he had to like run around the map and attack these little target things. So you could actually do a combination of that where it's like not one single, but it's like trick shooting.
Different sensors in
different locations.
That kind of like, I feel like that would eliminate the first part where it's like, you'd make way more mess.
Yes, that's very true. Yeah. I was also imagining like, you know, in the old, not super old movies, but like 80s movies, there'd be kids playing it at an arcade. They'd be doing like pinball or something. And there'd be like a group of people all around watching them try to get the high score. This is going to encourage all the wrong behaviors.
That's the other thing. Like you put a screen outside of the bathroom, you know.
Oh, with their score?
Yeah, like so the whole restaurant can see, you know, like imagine that in a bar. Like you're all just hanging out. And someone's like he's going to break the high score. No one's broken that since in the past 5 years. Like, Rick's going to be so ticked if this guy beats his high score. You know? Then Rick's going to have to show up the next day to, like, best the high score.
I feel like you're describing it as if it's a Dave and Buster's or, like, a Buffalo Wild Wings or something.
Oh, no, no. I mean, you're thinking too small. It could be anywhere.
What I'm picturing, though, is, like, this dive bar in the middle of North Dakota somewhere where it's only, you know, there's four guys who ever compete on it. You could call it competition.
Oh yeah. See, that's, I still need a good name for it, you know, but I think the first time I thought of this was when I was working as a high schooler at Craig's Cruisers. You know, in an arcade, and I'm like, you know, this would be just a brilliant idea. And yeah, I've only ever shared this idea with one of my other friends, whose name is also Ben, because I thought, you know, he would like actually be able to figure it out.
Was that weird? But
no, not that Ben.
Okay.
He would probably
What stage of life this was in.
No, yeah. No, but
have you guys
if you guys could figure that out, I think we could, you know, I'd be happy to go 50-50 with you.
It's a, it seems doable. Like it's not that far-fetched of an application.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's do this. The three of us get together. We'll come up with a pitch, you know, and then we'll go on Shark Tank.
But we still have to invent the thing and show how it works.
Correct. Yeah. So if you're listening and you would like to be part of our beta testing audience for this competition, please be sure to comment.
Yeah. And like we're going to need someone on the episode of Shark Tank who's willing, you know, not going to get stage fright. So, Corey, if you're listening, I think you can do it, buddy.
No, I think what we would have to do in the actual pitch would be like to have different sizes of squirt guns, and you could actually like spray the targets then, you know, and show it on TV.
Oh no, you've got to get a curtain. You just got to get a curtain around it.
Oh, like the quick change artist kind of thing.
Yeah, just like, you know, have. It'd probably be funnier. Yeah, you could probably even get like, you know, like a camera angle down that's just showing the urinal. And like the stream of pee hitting it. I don't know. That's the other thing. Like, how are you going to advertise it?
That seems risky.
Yeah, it does seem risky. I don't know if CBS or whatever, NBC, I don't know what Shark Tank's like, on.
Get the sensors ready. Before I forget, and Jack, I meant to message you about this earlier. This week, while I was on site working for the company in our office, I observed two adult males in a row walk directly from a urinal out the door. Like, I think they like grabbed a paper towel, but didn't wash their hands, didn't nothing.
It's winter. They can't be drying their hands out by washing them.
That's why they do it. They're very concerned about
That's right. Hand moisture. They don't want to have to put lotion on their hands. Like, a bunch of sissies. I mean,
maybe it's because the air is so dry, it just dries out all the germs. They can't infect
anything. Right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Desiccates them to death.
Yeah.
Wow, but, two in a row. I can understand if there's no one else in the bathroom, it's like, well, who's really going to know? Like, I still don't approve of it, but what can you do? But to do it when there's other people around to witness you do it, it's like the audacity of those guys.
Especially when it's a place you work where you're probably going to interact. It's not like you're in an airport where you're never going to see these people again.
And that was like, that was my thought was, I've got to look you in the eyes now and like know that whatever you're touching is grubby hands.
That's right. You know, like you don't want them jumping on your computer and like, oh yeah, let me show you this thing really quick. Jumping on your keys or something.
whoa. I saw you in the bathroom, Johnson.
Yeah. Would you bring it up then? Like, you know, say like you clearly see someone in your team meeting, you know, use a bathroom. Not wash, then you're in like this conference room, and you know, you got to use the same stuff.
This would be like,
what do you do?
I just bring in a box of blue nitrile gloves and I throw those bad boys on. I'm like, hey, how's it going? Sure, I'll shake your hand.
Yeah, could be socially awkward. That's another part that's bad about it. Like, look at the position that you're putting someone else in potentially by not washing your hands.
Exactly. Yeah. Be considerate.
A socially awkward barrier you just created.
Yeah. Be kind, rewind.
Although maybe that's all you want. You just want everyone to just feel super awkward around you. Because it's work.
Dominance play.
Like, yeah.
Power play is what I was thinking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you go ahead and mention that I didn't wash my hands in there, Ben. You go ahead. Who are you going to tell?
Jack, what were you going to add? You were starting to say, do you guys remember?
Have you guys, so going back to the high score urinal idea, have you guys ever seen Better Call Saul?
Nope.
Andrew, did you say nope?
Yeah, no. I mean, I know the character from Breaking Bad, but I've never seen Better Call Saul.
All right. So there's an episode where he's a freelance lawyer and he's trying out different, like he's kind of just a general law. He hasn't specialized. And one of his clients or potential client like called him up and said, hey, I want you to represent me. And I think he wanted to draft up an NDA or something in. He needed to sign an NDA when he was going to go see this guy because he was doing a patent for something. The guy was very secretive about what it is. And he goes to the guy and the guy just says, okay, here it is. And then he unveils a toilet and Saul's like, Jimmy, as he's known at times, I'm pretty sure I've used one of these before. And he's like, oh, but it's what's inside the toilet that makes it special. And he had this little device so that whenever a solid was detected as falling into the rim, it would give positive feedback, and the intention was that it was for potty training a kid. So like as the kid would, you know, drop another kid off at the pool, the toilet would intentionally say, oh, good job, you know, keep it up or something. But the other butt of the joke, pun definitely intended, is that the sayings that it would say were also very suggestive, like oh, Jimmy, you're so big. That's right, Jimmy. Put it in me. And then Jimmy's Saul, like the character was just like by the end of it, just couldn't keep a straight face. And he got the guy was so cheesed off at him, just like kicked him out. And Saul was just laughing. Oh, man.
Yeah. Imagine too, like you know, you get like the flu and you're throwing up in that toilet. It's like, oh, good job. Keep going. You're doing great.
So you're just retching up your insides.
Where you need the audio clip from Space Jam where the Looney Tunes are doing aerobics with Richard Simmons. And he goes, you're doing it. You're becoming mighty.
Yeah, if you could customize the sayings for that, I mean, like then we're talking, you know, that could be a real thing. It's like program your toilet to say whatever you want to say when you drop a load in there.
You know, I think we've talked about this before, but all I want is for a toilet that doesn't have a bunch of nooks and crannies that collect material like on the outside that you got to clean and dust and whatever. And that also doesn't like create this echo chamber when you use it. Like if we could just get those two things and then it didn't like clog and have all these issues or like a constantly running tank, you know, for as many units as there are in the world and as long as they've been around, they seem to sure have their issues that we can't figure out how to fix.
Yeah, I don't know how you get past the echo chamber thing, you know, like it's like something about porcelain just.
Well, it's simply the shape.
Yeah, change the shape. Too. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But the other stuff, you know, like you can make it run smooth on the sides and not have like all those spots where, like, you know, you look down there, and it's like, how did pee get down there? And why does it look like it's been there for 6 months? You know?
And they do make those. They make like flat sided toilets. And,
yeah.
Or toilets that don't have a stand that mount to the wall or whatever. Jack, I thought you were going to say that Jimmy or Saul hadn't yet chosen to specialize in bird law.
Ah.
With his very real hands.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Good old It's Always Sunny reference. For those of y'all who don't get it. It's Always Sunny, there's Charlie Kelly, who is an illiterate, and he claims to specialize in bird law. If you wonder what bird law is, so does everybody else. And then he has an uncle who's actually an attorney, but he is a very bad attorney. He's also very self-conscious about his small hands. So there's a scene where he gets like these, they're not, I mean, I think there is a scene where he wears the Hulk Hogan gloves or the Incredible Hulk gloves from like when we were kids. But then like he goes into a courtroom wearing these cheap Halloween costume, just big hands. And he's trying to pass them off as his real hands.
They're like, they look like the hamburger helper gloves, but they're painted like hands. They're that oversized though, like these big old mitts. And then someone's like, are you wearing fake hands? He tries to deny it. And then like one of them gets pinched or like falls off or something. And he goes running out of the courtroom.
Oh no. It's like, he does a dramatic like action where he turns around to point at somebody. And then just the centripetal force, the glove goes flying off. And then he's just screaming, don't look at it. Don't look at it. Don't look at it. As he goes. So go like grab it and put it back on.
Wow. So I am, I don't know what the right adjective to use here is, but I'm kind of surprised that with all the things that could be invented, like all the things that could change the world, we've got the toilet sensor, the urinal sensor.
That's number one. Yes.
That's number one.
Top priority.
Well, I just figured I'd share the thing that like I've spent the most brain time thinking about. So.
Yeah. No, that's good.
You know, like if I'm going to be fair and honest. Yeah. I mean.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's we're all about it.
Yeah.
Is there anything?
Do you have something better to offer, Ben?
Wow. Well, since you asked, I have. Let me see if I can find this. So I have a lot of Google Keep notes on my phone, and one of them, I had a list of probably like 40 things that should, like business ideas or, invention ideas. Just here we go. Here we go. I'll just start reading down the list. You can chime in. Also, some of this comes from my dad because he's always had some like off the wall ideas for things that he wants to do.
No doubt.
So the first one was Gluten Morgan, a German themed breakfast bistro with an emphasis on breads. The second one was Cafe Olé, a Mexican themed coffee shop with a French menu. Because Cafe Olé means It's pronounced the same, but it means two different things in French and Spanish.
Oh, ole meaning like, does ole mean like, let's go?
With milk.
In
Spanish, it's like, it's just like an exclamation. It doesn't really mean anything.
Oh, and yeah, in French, it's two words. It's O, which is A-U, which means kind of like to the or at the, or in this case, of the, which is, it's kind of a weird use of the proposition in French. And then lait, L-A-I-T, which is milk. So ole means kind of more literally to the milk.
To the milk,
or at the milk, but in practice, it means of milk.
Yep. So these first few were all word plays. The next one was, I wanted to start a brewery called Cold One with drinks named Whatever's Cheapest, Surprise Me, What's on Tap, What Are Your Specials, and One with Alcohol.
Oh my gosh.
That was pretty good.
So it's whenever somebody gives the generic answer for a drink at a bar.
I love that. The same friend who I know old versus new country from, he and I, when we were in college, were trying to come up with like the most blatant usual knockoffs of products. You know how there's like Dr. Pepper, right? And then there's all the different knockoffs like Dr. Thunder and stuff.
Yeah. Mr. Pibb.
Yeah. Well, we wanted to have, like, instead of Dr. Pepper, we would have Pepper, PhD. Instead of Mr. Coffee, we would have Mrs. Coffee. Instead of Mountain Dew, we would have Mount Dew, because we think that's legally different enough. And just knockoffs like that. So I'm definitely going to bring up this idea because he would appreciate it.
I did realize pretty quickly, I think servers would not appreciate it because they're, I think they would be the, they would be getting a lot of pushback and like, that's not what I wanted or I wasn't actually ordering anything, but.
But the novelty of it would make people.
Oh yeah, for sure. Let's see a couple of other ones in here. I wanted to have create a TV show called Doctor Whom, which is about grammar Nazis. This one potentially has some maybe health ethics ramifications, but the idea nonetheless was to create an app that would pair people who are trying to like diet and track their calories with food producers and retailers. So it's like if you're trying to cut out 200 calories a day, there would be, say, like a grocery store that has extra food that would donate those 200 calories. So it would like directly tie something that you're trying to do for your benefit to a good that would benefit somebody else.
I'm not following that premise.
So basically, like, we would find grocery stores who are going to, or often contribute food or money or whatever to certain causes. And it's like, so there's a game back in the early 2010s called freerice.com. It was created by Michigan State University. And they basically found partners who would donate. It was a word matching game. And they would donate 10 grains of rice for every word that you matched correctly. Nice. So it was a game you could play for fun, but you were also contributing to this food donation. So I'm saying if you do that, but like people could, who were intentionally dieting and like trying to maintain a lower calorie threshold, they could donate the balance of their daily calories through this grocery store.
Yeah. That's good. Not bad. Kind of like that.
Let's see. An app that pairs you up with apps matching your interests, so like help you find apps that you like and would use.
The ultimate middleman.
Yes. An app to rate other drivers in proximity on the road, so you could like people who were within Bluetooth range, you could rate their driving in the app or give them feedback or send them messages.
Like that one.
That would cause no problem.
None at all.
None.
a dating app that shows what percent you accept or reject and how many people want to match with you. So essentially, like, it would show how selective you are, right? And how desirable you are to other people. A dating app just named Church, so that when people ask how you met, you could say, we met at church.
I like that one.
That was really good. Yeah.
That's like the, Jack, what's the name of the bar over on College Hill? Is it the library? Is that what it's called?
Oh, I've never been there. I've heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think a lot of schools have one like that, but.
What are you doing tonight? Oh, I'm going to the library. Oh, good for you. Studying hard, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Sure. You said it, not me.
What an app that lets emerging bands volunteer their music for YouTube videos to avoid copyright issues. Or stuff like this, where you could just be like, hey, yeah, we'll give you our music to get name recognition and, you know, get our brand out there.
It sounds awfully a lot like when jobs offer. It's like, we don't pay you, but you get experience with this job.
Yeah. It's an internship.
Yes.
Let's see. An app that would check weather along the route as a trip planner. So you didn't have to, like, manually check points as you go. But you'd see, like, what the weather's going to be at the time where you're going to be in each of those locations.
And that one could hit really well.
Yeah, man.
That's just a funny wordplay. That's legit useful.
Yeah, like if Google is listening to this right now, you know.
Yeah.
Like, listen up, Google. I mean, listen up.
And give royalties.
I'm sure some of these already exist in some form already, but I don't know. One of them was to use a phone as a car stereo head unit display. So not even have the little infotainment console, basically just have a space and then you put your phone on there and it becomes the car display. High-speed, long-distance car train. So that's like... basically, I think what I was thinking about, there's two different methods you could take this. One of them would be like a car ferry, but it'd be like you drive on and drive off a train going across the country, so you'd still have your car with you when you got to the end of the trip.
Oh.
But you could like get on and off at any point.
Mm-hmm.
Or the other one was, as autonomous cars get more and more popular, to be able to basically sync up. So you're all driving in like a school where it looks like a long chain of cars that are only a couple inches apart because they can all communicate, you know, hey, I'm going to brake. I'm braking at this rate or whatever, you know, so you don't have issues with collision potential.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Let's see. Powdered beer for backpackers.
Just
ash filtered water from a lake.
How do you get it carbonated? Add some dry ice. There you go. Done.
Something. Yeah.
Something.
GPS for lawnmowers.
That needs to be like, I have a neighbor across the street that has a lawnmower that, like, you know, goes out every day, cuts his grass. Like, I'm just thinking, like, why don't I have one of these? Like, it's genius. And, like, yeah, we got to, like, bring that technology to the forefront because we're wasting our lives cutting grass.
Yeah, you get to see outside, you get exercise, you can make it look pretty at the same time. It's not a waste of time.
I just wanted it to help cut the rows straight, right? Like, when you drive by fields now, you can tell they're planted by GPS because you can see all the way to the other end of the row.
Oh.
And then when you're mowing a lawn, it's like you're trying to eyeball it and you still get all the squigglies. I mean,
yeah.
The more you practice, the better you get, but it's still not great. Man, this is only like halfway through the list.
How long did you spend on this, Ben?
this was just as I had an idea, I'd open up the note and add it to the list. So this was several years of accumulation of different ideas. But
oh, okay. I thought this was specifically for this episode.
Oh, no.
Okay. He just generates 40 fresh ideas.
Like, well, that's why I wondered. I was like, how long were you just sitting there brainstorming?
He's like, Jack was 10 minutes late for the meeting, so I just came up with 40 ideas.
So I had one, which was to create an app, like think like PayPal, where you can enter your payment information in one place and use it everywhere. But it was for job applications. So you could enter your resume in one place, and then you could use it to apply to a bunch of different websites or companies.
Mm-hmm. Well, hold on. Can I stop you on that one real quick? So are you talking about the whole completed resume or just like different chunks of the resume? Because you can't just take the same resume and use it to apply to a bunch of different jobs. Not, I mean, you can, but it's not optimal. But there are some sections of the resume where maybe it will be the same resume, to, like application to application, or a lot of them will share the same info. So were you talking about the whole thing or individual sections?
I was talking about the whole thing because I think most people aren't putting that much effort into it to try to customize it for each employer. Not saying that they shouldn't be, but.
Well, we'd be encouraging that behavior, Ben.
Yeah. I mean, they're already doing it. It's just making it more efficient. So
you're enabling them.
You know what they should like that? That makes me think like, we should have an app that like you can like write your testimony down on and like, you know, gives you feedback of like how to write it better. But then like you actually have it written down in a place and don't like lose it all the time or forget it or like, you know, need to write it down like once a year and like forget what you did with the old copy. And
yeah,
you know, if you just had an app that like could help you like perfect it and actually use it. For evangelistic purposes or whatever, you know, that'd be a good app to like refine your testimony.
Like suggestions on how to write it better.
Yeah. Just like within the app, it could give you feedback or like, just like, or.
Isn't that what Grammarly does?
That's what I was thinking.
Oh, Rob, but this was like catered to a testimony. I've never used Grammarly, I guess.
I've only seen commercials, but
yeah.
Yeah.
It'll less about the grammar, but more about like, you know, just like cleaning up language you might use. Like if you're being super vague or like, you know what I'm saying? Like it's catered to helping you present a better, like testimony of sharing the gospel.
Yeah.
Through your story. Yeah.
So it would be kind of like, whereas Grammarly is focused more or like other AI writing assistant software, yours would be like the AI would be centered on that particular.
Yeah.
That particular
it would be very goal. Specific.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I would say it's way less important than the high score urinal. So we can just,
there's
nothing preventing us from doing both. We could do both.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to read a couple more of these highlights
keep
here
going.
From the rest of the list.
This is mostly I wanted to do this topic because I wanted to hear what Ben's ideas were.
This is your madly scribbling notes, so you can go use them.
No, I just think it's interesting.
Create an app that could diagnose car trouble by photo, sound, behavior, etc., like a WebMD for cars. Mm.
Your car is terminal cancer.
It's making a funny noise. Sell it.
Yep. It's totaled.
There are a couple apps related to food. So one of them was a recipe app that lets you scan items in a grocery store to track if you have the ingredients for it. And then there's another one that's an app where you could like scan your pantry and it would give you recipe ideas based on the food that you have already.
There is a website like that out there because I did that one time where I had to I was at my in-laws house and like the youngest my wife's youngest sister is there And like, you know, normally there's always takeout for us there, but for some reason there wasn't. And so I'm like, all right, I guess I'm going to have to figure out how, what to cook something. And like, I was like, well, I heard about this like website, just put in the ingredients we have in the house and we'll cook something. Ended up cooking like this really terrible spaghetti. like there was no meat. So it's just like some sauce. And like, I didn't actually have any onions or anything. So I'm just dumping in onion and garlic powder, you know, I'm just like,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it does exist. It probably could be refined into an app though, where you don't have to like, you could just like scan things instead of manually typing things in.
Yep. That's what I was going for, is like, do it without typing, more or less.
Yeah. Yeah. People would be way more motivated to use it that way for sure.
I'll leave with these last two. There's more on the list, but I think these actually would have some real meaningful value. So one of them was to create an app. I named it Lifeline, but they've done studies that show you can analyze the way people write and accurately predict the extent to which they're experiencing depressive feelings and symptoms. And so this app would basically, you would give it permissions to your device, and then it could scan your text messages, your Facebook, your social media, whatever. And essentially it would be private to you, but it would, you'd give it access to see your data, and then it could analyze and tell you like, hey, I think based on what you're writing, you may want to like get some help because this correlates to people who are, you know, severely depressed or whatever. So these are both of these are diagnostic ideas. So that was the first one. The second one is, it occurred to me that, you know, we get a lot of recommendations for getting checked for skin cancer, but it's like, how many people actually go to a dermatologist and get checked as often as they would like, or they recommend being checked? I think the number is very small, unless you actually either had it already or know someone or related to someone who's had it and it's front of mind. So my suggestion was, well, who else sees your skin that you might actually go to on a normal basis? I was like, oh, why don't we train massage therapists to detect or be able to identify potential skin cancer? And then they could be part of that whole tool where it's like, hey, yeah, glad you enjoyed your massage. Also, we found something you may want to go see a dermatologist about. So get that looked at.
Yeah.
It's not really an app, but it's training.
Ben just over here trying to make sure Robert Kraft, you know, doesn't die of skin cancer.
Well,
who's Robert Kraft?
Dude, how did you like that? Sorry, is a reference pulled out of the thin. I mean, it's a good
yeah, callback. That's specific for you, Ben. But anyway, it is a good idea though, for real.
To answer your question, Jack, Robert Kraft is the owner of the New England Patriots. And the reference that Andrew was making is that after the, what was it, like AFC Championship game or something a few years ago, he was detained by the police following a football game in Florida for visiting a massage parlor that had a reputation for offering other services, shall we say.
Oh, happy endings, as it were.
Yes, correct.
Ah.
Yep. And then
I just assumed that whole scenario is what inspired Ben's idea.
Yeah.
What if the extra service they were providing Ben was skin cancer screening?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
You just put your dermatology office right next door to a massage therapy location, yeah. Right?
And that's right. Yeah. I mean, I think both parties win, you know.
Your shirts and like, your pants, in this guy's case, are already off. And you just go from one, you just walk right next door.
Hey, and while you're at it, you can have a dry cleaning facility on the other side.
There so you go. They can
clean your clothes while you're getting a massage. And then the dermatologist just pops in for a quick check. Mm-hmm. It's like a full service organization here.
Mm-hmm. and in the bathroom at these places. High score urinals.
Corey, if you're listening.
No one's going to want to leave this place.
I think what we've just designed is like the beginning of what people actually want a retirement community to be like. Where there's like this much thought put into how everything should work. And then you don't have to feel like you're going to the doctor or anything. You know, you're just going to relax. And
that's right. Imagine the retirement community you could create, just like where everyone just feels like they're, yeah, it's all, everything just like, it feels like a flow of their day, you know, it's like they're riding a wave. Everything's just like, oh, wow. Yeah.
You know, if we're trying to find ways to kind of like, oh, while you're doing this, let's get this very same area of your body checked out. You know, like you're already getting a massage, or maybe you're going to the pool. You already have your shirt off. Let's take a look at your skin to get skin cancer treatments. I would be interested to hear your guys' ideas for how we can get the proctologist involved in this. Well, you're already doing that, whatever that is.
Can you explain what a proctologist is to us in detail, Jack?
I'm not a trained proctologist, nor have I ever had to go to one. But sure, let me do my best. A proctologist is a doctor who specializes in the rectum. Often will stick a camera up your butt to see if you have any problems in your colonic region. So the question is, how do we work a colonoscopy, again, camera in the butt, into your daily routine at the retirement home?
So let's just be clear. That should not be part of anyone's daily routine.
You'd have to make it part of like, you know, I don't know how often you're supposed to get checked when you're of that age, but it's like it'd have to be part of the community that would line up with something you'd only do like once a year, once every other year, whatever, you know.
It could be like when you go to vote, you know, they're like,
oh, there we go. Now we're talking.
You're already getting reamed. What's one more time, right?
Okay, so hear me out. I have the solution. What if you had a toilet and in the bottom you put a sensor that would, you know, measure like accuracy or flow rate or whatever? You could, you know, have a camera there too, so that while they're doing their business, you get the
proctology
exam.
Yeah, no, I think you're gonna want something where they're gonna like go in and be willing to go under, you know.
Yeah, presumably.
Ben, I was gonna say if you buy the premium package of that toilet, you can get the recordings of the video and watch them back in your life.
Although, interestingly enough, like when I go to the eye doctor, they have pictures of my eyes, right? Like in super detail, or at the dentist, they got pictures of my teeth. And it's like, man, why don't I have those? It'd be fun to just have a photo album of like, oh yeah, that was 2020 and the year I had a crown put in. Look at that guy. Man.
If only Tim still worked at the eye doctor, you could be like, yeah. Hey, Tim, you want to give me some of those pics?
my medical records, which I should have access to. Wow, that conversation took a turn.
Yeah.
A good turn.
I was going to say, though, in this ideal retirement community, Robert Kraft would be there riding that wave with us, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
people would probably live longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go ahead, Ben.
I was just going to say, if only all parts of society were this well thought out,
yeah,
it would be a better place.
It would.
Mm-hmm. I want to know, like, I got to get at least one good idea from Jack here.
Oh, yeah. The thing that came to my mind. I unfortunately forgot to give this thought ahead of time. I'm sorry, Andrew. but the thing that jumped in my head was a chemical that would inhibit plant growth. And I don't mean kill the plant. I mean, you kind of just freeze it in its development, so it doesn't really get any bigger. So you can like spray it on your lawn, or you can spray it on bushes. You'd never have to mow your lawn. Or like maybe very rarely, maybe it would slow it way down. Or like, you know, trim your bushes rather than like once or twice a year. Maybe it's like once every 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, just, I mean, I'm going to stop.
That reminds me of, there's a Jack Black movie called Envy, where the premise is that he's this like creator. He came up with a chemical that can instantly dissolve fecal material. So instead of like picking up after your dog or horses or whatever, you just have the spray can, you just spray it and it like disappears. And it's called, the name of the chemical is called Vaporize. So it's like, it's kind of like the story of the WD-40 guy, but like, you know, he creates this aerosol chemical, gets, you know, phenomenally wealthy. And then I think the moral of the story is like he ends up not being happy and like it ruins his life and he kind of has to go back to square one. But
wait, the WD-40 guy?
No. The Envy Jack Black character.
What does it have to do with WD-40?
The only connection was coming up with an aerosolized chemical that makes you phenomenally wealthy.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Not like a life parallel thing. But
I mean, to go back to like Jack's idea, imagine if you could do that, like once you get your hair cut or you get your hair right the way you want it, like the certain length or your beard, you know?
Yeah.
Or, you know, and you could use it, and, you know, if you could use it on human application, that's like great, you know? You know how many like bald people you could have saved if you had that invented? Like, you know, I'm going to preserve my hair right now in time.
You like notice yourself gaining weight. You just spray a little bit on your stomach.
Oh, yeah. It's like, nope. You stop that.
Yeah. Although I think the way you described it, Jack, to me, it sounds like it would be a metabolism suppressant. Like it would take the way that plants metabolize energy and slow that process down. It wouldn't stop it, but it would just bring it to like a very, very slow trickle.
Mm.
And so I think unless you can manage that well, like for a human, if your intake doesn't change, it's going to make the problem worse. Like it's going to slow your metabolism way down, but your intake doesn't change. So you like spray it on your stomach and it's like, yeah, it's like instant swelling. Somehow I don't think that would sell very well.
Well, you know, if like they made the chemical for plants, someone would try it on themselves. Like, you know.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
There'd be like immediately lawsuits from, you know, a parent that decided that their kid should never get taller or whatever. And
that's right. Or like, you know, like modern day eunuch or whatever, where they're trying to like keep their voice real high for singing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or they get a puppy and decide they don't ever want it to be full grown.
Oh, that's just mean.
I like how we talked about mistreating children. That's just mean responses to the puppy.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not surprised, but...
Yeah, I think you could tell where my sympathies lie strongest.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you were put to it in like a life or death situation, you could only rescue a child or a dog. I think you would choose the child. But if it was like you could only go, you could only spend a moment with one or the other, you would choose the dog every time.
Oh, absolutely. The zero hesitation on that.
Man, you guys need to spread your seed and father some children here.
Wow.
Well, we're not talking about our own kid, right? If it were my kid or some random puppy, then of course I'd spend it with my kid. But if it's some random kid and a random puppy, I'll take the puppy any day.
You also don't tend to get strange parents asking uncomfortable questions if you're hanging out with a puppy.
That's versus true.
If
That's
you're hanging out with a child you don't know.
That's another good point.
That's a good point.
The puppy is the safer option either way.
Yeah, puppy's probably not going to cry. Your percentage of getting like positive feedback from a puppy is much higher.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point.
Yeah. That was one of the ideas I didn't read on my list, was an app that could determine your child's energy level based on the volume of their crying or shouting or shrieking or whatever.
That's right. It's like they can only sustain this level of screaming for 6 more minutes. Just ride it out.
Oh, I see.
Ride it out. Yeah.
I was going to ask, why would you need an app to tell you that? Can't you just tell? It's like he's screaming pretty loud.
Yeah, but like if you could wait it out a little longer.
That's yeah. So to that application, yeah, that would actually would be interesting to know.
I was thinking more if you could get it accurate enough to where it was like, okay, there is a meltdown coming in 15 minutes if you don't if they don't get sleep or food or something like that, right?
As
preemptive nudge that based on their previous behavior and what the current sound levels are or sound patterns, whatever that. You're headed to a bad place.
I would not want that power in a mother's hands.
Yeah.
Just like that would be too much.
That'd
that
be
poor
too
child
much.
That poor child would be micromanaged to the T.
Oh.
You know? Because that's the way mothers are. It'd be like, oh my goodness. In 45 minutes, he's gonna have a breakdown if I don't feed him right now.
I see. Like, he'd be spoiled.
It'd be too much. It'd be too much.
I see. The mom would coddle them too much. Okay.
Or yeah, they would be controlled their whole life.
Yeah.
No freedom.
Now, I do have a question. Babies and toddlers, I mean, the older you get as a human, the less this happens. But in those first few years of life, for at least the first handful, babies, toddlers, young children tend to, you know, react super strongly to minor inconveniences and discomforts. And they also have insane mood swings. Like you can have a baby chuckling, giggling, happy as a clam, 10 seconds later is shrieking his voice out, bawling his eyes out, and then another 10 seconds later back to being happy as a clam. My question, not so much for the mood swings, but there's this thread talking about stupid reasons why my child is crying, and there were things like
those are great.
Yeah, where it's just like I made macaroni and like it shows a baby crying and then it's like the reason why he's crying, I made macaroni and cheese tonight, and then below that it was he asked me to make macaroni and cheese or like
I wouldn't let him climb into the dryer while it was running.
Or like he didn't want to go to the dentist today, and then below that it says we were never going to the dentist today. Like the kid just got it in his head that they were going to the dentist. Mm-hmm. Or like he's crying because he couldn't eat the dog. Why do you think babies, or like even like, or not babies, but just even toddlers, or again like maybe like 4 or 5 year olds, kind of growing out of the toddler age, where like they will get like I want a popsicle. Oh, sorry, son, not right now. And then they just start bawling their eyes out. So my question is, do you think that those inconveniences, discomforts, disappointments are actually psychologically, chemically in their like hormones or whatever is, you know, flowing through the bodies is actually much stronger and really what to them is like, oh, we're not going to the park right now. We're going in another 20 minutes is as devastating as Mark, I'm sorry to tell you, but we just got the call. Your wife has died in a car accident, you know, like that, you know, something that extreme, because they have a similar reaction. So my question is, do you think there's actually something physiological going on with a baby where those things actually do affect them that strongly? Or is it just that as a baby, the bar for what qualifies as in life ruining disappointment just hasn't been set all that low yet or all that high. So it's just like, this is the most devastating thing they've ever experienced because they're so young. And so that's how they react. And then it just say, oh kid, if you think this is bad, it's going to get a whole lot worse. You know what I mean? Which way do you think it is?
Go ahead, Andrew.
Oh, I don't know. I think kids, like, I think you learn, like, as you get corrected and parented or whatever, like, it almost suppresses your reactions, or, like, you become more in touch with the reality of the situation. Where it's like, I don't know if, like, they're actually feeling the emotions as strongly as, like, you'd feel if something tragic happened to you as an adult. I think it's like, it's just like, I think it's all learned behavior. So, yeah, I guess
you think it's learned behavior?
Yeah, like, in the sense of, like, we're learning as you grow and, like, you get parented or, like, told no. Like, you're able to, you're learning how to adjust and have, like, different expectations. So when things don't go your way or something that you think is bad is happening. So, like, your reaction, I don't think is, like, the chemical reaction that's happening in your body is not as extreme. It's like, if say you're an adult and you, like, your wife died in a car crash, like, I think what you're feeling would be much, much greater than what a kid is feeling. I think for a kid, like, you know, their learned behavior is that, like, that is so, like, what before they're learning, it's, like, so terrible. But, like, as you get corrected on that, you realize it's not that terrible.
Okay.
So,
but, like, even so, that where I say, like, when you're an adult and you've, like, learned that things aren't that terrible, like, when something actually terrible enough happens, like, that it can spark the same, like, from the outside emotional response.
I think
I don't know if that's correct.
I think the way you framed it, Jack, it's actually both to some extent, and maybe a couple of other factors. Because, so when I was younger, my uncle introduced me to this theory that part of the reason that life seems to speed up as you get older is because each element of time, each unit of time represents a smaller and smaller percentage of your lived experience.
So relatively, a year when you're 40 is much less of your life than a year when you're 10. So
right,
it feels so the quicker.
The days fly by faster, the hours, the weeks, the months, the years, and so on, than when you're a kid. Because I remember being like 5, 6, 7 years old, spending an afternoon digging outside or climbing a tree. Seemed like it was forever, right? Like, our concept of time as a child is very distorted. Like, time horizons don't really mean anything for the first few years. And so I think if you take that same principle and apply it to a situation like a discomfort or a genuinely distressing event, a child has had many fewer of those than what we've had as adults. So part of what you're saying, Andrew, I think is true, where we learn to actively manage our expectations and to adjust ourselves relative to the environment. But we also accumulate a library of events that didn't go our way. And so we have a better gauge of, like, what's truly distressing versus what's just an inconvenience. And I think also for children, they don't, when, especially when you're talking about, you know, 20 minutes to them seems like an eternity. It's like, if I told you, hey, I'm hungry, and you said, I'll get you a meal, I know you're really hungry, I'm going to get you a meal, and I'll have it to you in a month, right? Like, as an adult, you'd be like, that's not good enough. I'm hungry now. Like, that's a problem. And so if you think in, you know, a child's perception of time, you saying that you're going to do something in 20 minutes, it might be the equivalent of saying it'll be ready in a month, right? And so that, so their level of distress might actually be equivalent to what someone feels when they find out their spouse has died, because they haven't had those actually truly traumatic experiences to, like, raise the bar on what warrants that level of response. Right?
That's interesting. Yeah, I could see that. And it's interesting, I think there's, like, in that theory, though, it's not like a gradual progression, I don't think so much, though. It's like, once you hit a certain age, there's, like, a level of, like, you've had, I think you get hit a certain age where there's enough experience that then, like, you can, like, make the adjustment.
Yep.
You know?
For sure. Yep.
I don't know what that is. You know?
I think part of that, too, is when you're able to, you can realize causality and understand why you're not getting what you want in the moment, right? Because when you're really young, you don't, if your parent says, I'm not going to give you that or whatever, you don't really have a conception of the reasoning that they're putting forward for why that's not going to happen. But at some age, you get old enough, you go, oh, I asked for a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and I'm not getting that because mom's in the bathroom, right? And so like, she can't make me a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Versus like the kid who doesn't have that realization is going, mom's here. She, you know what I mean? Like we have the stuff, like make it.
She must hate me. Yeah.
Right. And I think the other thought that I had is a little bit of a tangent, but it wasn't until the early 90s that medical like professionals had consensus that babies feel pain. For years and years and years, even after they were giving painkillers and anesthesia to adults, there still wasn't consensus that children could feel pain. And so they would do all sorts of operations with no anesthesia, no like sedatives at all for kids, just like go to town because they didn't think they could feel pain. And I'm sure they had all sorts of reasons for why they thought that, but I just wanted to bring that up because I think we often make them, I'm not discounting the fact that children are developing and that they're, the hormone levels in them and all the things that they're exposed to are different than what they are in adults. But on the flip side, I think we often differentiate too much between what an adult experiences and what a child experiences. And to the point of pain, like if you think about the function that pain provides, it helps protect you from injuring yourself, right? Or to let you know that you have been injured in some way. And so from a functional perspective, basically any organism has to have a feedback response that tells them when they're being harmed for them to continue surviving, right? Like ants, maybe they're not like conscious in the way that we are, but they have to be able to feel pain in some sense, or they would all just run around, you know, falling into pits and dying. Like everything would kill them. They wouldn't have any way to protect themselves from injury. So fundamentally, I think that the element of pain is present in really any organism to some degree, because that's how they survive. So anyway,
something similar, maybe not a sensation, but they have some sort of their something in their body is alerting the central controlling system to, hey, a part of me is damaged or is in danger of becoming damaged. Do you need to react in a way to prevent that?
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. Sounds like Ben's advocating that plants have emotions too, and that we should stop harvesting them.
Yeah.
Well, it's like that smell of fresh cut grass. Part of that is like their defense mechanism. They're communicating to the other grass in the area that there is a damaging predator nearby of some kind, right? They've done studies that show trees can communicate through root networks in a forest and like indicate that there's a threat on one side to the other. So certainly I'm not claiming that it's like with the level of consciousness that we have, but at least as like a data signal going from one place to another, there's very strong parallels in a lot of things.
Yeah.
So fresh cut grass is actually like they're burning flesh.
Yes. The wails of their dead and mutilated going up.
That's why mowing is so loud, actually. It's not the gas engine, it's the cries of the blades. But I think you can go too far, right? And you can be like agonizing over everything, but I think it does help inform having a respect for living things, right? And that we should be maybe err on the side of caution in how we might be inflicting pain or damage to other things.
Mm-hmm. Stuff for trees, man. We gotta be able to build stuff. Keep cutting them down.
I'll just call you Saruman.
Yes. Cut them all down. I would just want to plug in that just because an organism, I'll go specifically to plants, but I guess fungi would be same story. Fun fact, apparently biologically, fungus is more closely related to animals than it is to plants. So whenever you eat a mushroom, that is closer to being an animal than it is closer to being a plant. I'm not entirely sure how you quantify that, but there you go.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, sit on Ice Age, Uncle Fungus. I mean,
okay. Yeah. Yes, I'm sure
You're a little behind. A little behind on this, Jack.
I like that you're using Pixar or whatever for your
DreamWorks.
For your,
I don't think that was Pixar.
For that your like one of those scientific revelations.
Yeah, I think it was DreamWorks. Yes, you're right. DreamWorks.
Mm-hmm. So Steven Spielberg is your source of scientific knowledge,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it. The point I'm trying to make is just because a plant or a fungus has a defense mechanism, that certainly doesn't necessitate that therefore it must have a conscience and that it is consciously fighting back or trying to heal itself, right? Sure. Your body, you don't have to have a conscience. You can be brain dead in a coma or you can be a vegetable. And if you get a cut on your arm's going to scab up.
Right.
Right. You don't have to tell, oh, crap, I've been cut. Hurry, clot that wound. And then we need to go, you know, tell others that there's danger in the area.
But on the flip side, we can't definitively prove that those cells don't have consciousness, can we?
I suppose not. So I tell you what, if you're concerned with all living organisms, including plants and fungus, of having a conscience, therefore you shouldn't eat them, just stop eating all animals, stop eating all plants, stop eating all fungus.
Stop walking on any surfaces and crushing them. Uh-huh. Yep. Mm-hmm. Don't consume any products made from anything that isn't synthetic.
Why don't you do us all a favor, folks?
Like, synthetic. This is my argument for the synthetic movement for genetically engineered foods and petroleum-based products and
lab-grown meat.
Yep. Yep.
But no, because we're talking about the individual cells, aren't we?
I mean, if it's at that level, then we're hosed, right?
Yeah. So,
yeah.
You're just you're committing cruel genocide anytime you do anything at that point.
But all the cells are too, so I guess
we're all it's not our fault.
Genocidal together.
Hooray!
So I mean, if we're going with that theory, then of like that, you know, back to Jack talking about his fungus.
His fungus.
It was not my fungus. I don't have fungus.
Talk about Jack's fungus. That's what Jack's gonna name his shroom store. Jack's fungus. Anyway, so like if you know you're saying like that fungus has it's more closely related to animals and it has consciousness, say, then like people who are you know like taking shrooms and going on a trip, like that shroom is like has a consciousness that's taking you on your trip, right?
Whoa, I mean, yeah, it's like a spiritual guide.
Uh-huh. I'm like Aaron Rodgers vibing right now.
Mm-hmm. With your what's the one he
ayahuasca?
Ayahuasca, yeah.
Yeah.
Ayahuasca.
Yeah. Hmm. That's right. Cause that
well I
you know
here
consciousness.
I was gonna say to me the way at least a couple of ways that mushrooms seem more like animals than plants is that as far as I know, they don't synthesize sunlight and they also the flesh that you could eat is more similar to like meat or fatty tissue than it is to a woody plant tissue, in my opinion.
Yeah, less fibrous, I guess, and more.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I don't know if cellulose plays a role in fungi, if they have cellulose structures like plants do or not, but.
Jack, as our fungus expert in the room,
what was the question?
She's zoning out.
If fungi construct their structure using cellulose like plants do, or if they gain their rigidity from another chemical compound.
I don't think it's cellulose. Don't quote me on that, but I don't think it is.
Jack doesn't think it's cellulose.
Or do you know what? Do quote me on that. I'm not gonna or not. I'm not gonna tell you how to live your life.
Right. Don't you dare look it up either. You'll ruin the podcast.
Not while we're live, anyway.
That's yeah.
Fine. But I do need to depart. So I hate to cut it short here, but I've enjoyed the conversation. We got some good topics in, good tangents. It's a pleasure having you join us, Andrew. And
yeah, this was great. So, like, dream come true.
We can make it happen again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometime it would be great to come visit in person.
Oh.
So I can actually see what Jack looks like as he's hiding behind his, you know, doesn't turn his camera on. You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Webcams. They don't weird me out.
They freak you out.
Yeah,
freak
I wouldn't go that far to say they freak me out, but it's just, I don't know. It's weird to me.
It's a preference.
Do you have a Band-Aid over your webcam, like everyone's mother-in-law? You know?
No.
I got a little flapper.
On my work laptop, yeah, it actually has a built-in, like, little thing that you can flip. It's a slider that you can cover your camera. And then my in-home webcam, which I do have hooked up, I just have it pointing up, so it's not pointing at my face.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah
I'm pretty
I'm
sure
fully, I'm not like vehemently against them. It's just like,
yeah,
if there's no reason that you need to see me, then like if I'm not trying to show you guys something, I will generally not turn it on.
Oh yeah. Well, anyway, if I was ever on again, it'd be cool to do it in person.
All right.
Oh. Yeah. You're welcome to visit anytime. We got a guest room, so
woohoo.
Thanks everybody for joining us. And if you have any thoughts you'd like to share, as always, we love hearing from you. And if you want to be a guest in a future episode, you can always sign up using the link in the episode description. So until next time, take care.